We will incentivize democratic behavior, but we will not promote democracy through costly military interventions or by attempting to overthrow authoritarian regimes by force.
President Biden's foreign policy further defined. It's Friday, March 5th. This is VOA Asia. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Find us online at VOA Asia Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and YouTube. Also ahead, China accelerates vaccine push. Teens tackle cold climate. Understanding the U.S. Capitol siege, drone policing, and seniors on social media. It's all on today's VOA Asia. Secretary of State Antony Blinken outlined the broad contours of President Joe Biden's foreign policy, saying the administration will promote democracy abroad, but not through costly military interventions, which he said had failed in the past. VOA senior diplomatic correspondent Cindy Sain shares more details.
With the U.S. military now operating in Iraq for 30 years and in Afghanistan for 20 years, critics of military interventionism have long called for the United States to bring its troops home and forgo future regime change efforts. On Wednesday, Secretary of State Antony Blinken said the Biden administration will forge its own course, seeking to promote democracy by example, not by force.
We will incentivize democratic behavior, but we will not promote democracy through costly military interventions or by attempting to overthrow authoritarian regimes by force. We've tried these tactics in the past. However well-intentioned, they haven't worked.
Blinken said military interventions have given democracy promotion a bad name and have lost the confidence of the American people. He promised the Biden administration will do things differently, including shoring up democracy at home as a foreign policy imperative. Blinken said China is the biggest threat, because it is the only country with the power to challenge and destabilize an open international system. He said Washington must engage Beijing from a position of strength.
That requires working with allies and partners, not denigrating them, because our combined weight is much harder for China to ignore. It requires engaging in diplomacy and in international organizations, because where we've pulled back, China has filled in.
Acknowledging he and many members of the new administration, including Joe Biden, served under President Barack Obama, Blinken rejected any notion that the current team is a restoration of the Obama administration. He said that time has passed and Biden will see the world with fresh eyes. Cindy Sain, VOA News.
There's more on this and the other stories you hear on VOA Asia by following us online at Twitter and Facebook, both at VOA Asia. These are among some of the top Asia headlines you'll find right now when you visit voanews.com. Hong Kong keeps activists detained after granting bail. U.S. hails German warship plan to sail South China Sea. Senior citizens rush for shots as India expands inoculation drive. Pakistani Prime Minister to seek vote of confidence from Parliament after Senate poll blow. Bangladesh High Court grants bail to imprisoned cartoonist. You'll find expanded coverage of these stories and so much more when you visit us online at Facebook at VOA Asia and stop by the voanews.com website. VOA Asia continues. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Nearly 50 countries have either received or ordered at least one of the three Chinese-developed COVID-19 vaccines. That's according to an Associated Press survey. We hear more with VOA's Mariama Diallo on the vaccine rollouts.
Belgrade nightclub owner Dusko Milojevic has lost two close friends to the coronavirus. One was the same age and left two children behind.
He was a healthy man without any underlying medical conditions.
So when the Serbian government offered him a vaccine, Milojevic, who got his second Sinopharm vaccine earlier last month, didn't care where the vaccine came from.
I only cared that it has been approved somewhere.
The Serbian government says it has purchased just over 2.6 million doses from various sources, mostly from China. Serbian authorities, who were on hand for the vaccine's arrival, thanked China.
We will be able to save thousands and thousands of lives. That is why tonight I am very overjoyed, and I can't find the words to express all of my gratitude to China.
Other countries, ranging from Chile in Latin America to Zimbabwe and Senegal in Africa to Indonesia in Southeast Asia, have also lined up to get the shots.
We're seeing certainly real-time vaccine diplomacy start to play out with China in the lead in terms of being able to manufacture vaccines within China and make them available to others, largely low- and middle-income countries around the world.
Dr. Krishna Udayakumar, Global Health Innovation Center at Duke University, says that China is clearly exercising what is known as soft power.
So when you're making diplomatic decisions in 2 or 3 years, you may have fond memories of who was there to help you in the middle of a crisis.
The ruling Communist Party denies claims about Beijing's motives.
We believe that all countries should work together to resist vaccine nationalism and promote the impartial and reasonable distribution of vaccines, especially distribution among developing countries.
COVAX, an initiative led by the World Health Organization and partners, has been helping to accelerate development and equitable access to COVID vaccines. More than 170 nations, including the United States, are taking part in the initiative to deliver more than 2 billion doses worldwide. Deliveries under the program have already begun in Ghana, Ivory Coast, and India. Mariama Diallo, VOA News.
Happening now in Asia, several thousand coup protesters returned to the streets of Myanmar's second city Thursday, cautious but undeterred by brutal police action the previous day that left an estimated 3 people dead. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. We're glad to have you with us as we approach the weekend on VOA Asia. For the first time in Australia, teenage activists have launched a class action lawsuit on behalf of young people around the world to stop a large coal mining project 430 kilometers northwest of Sydney. A trial started earlier in the week in the federal court in Melbourne. From Sydney, Phil Mercer reports.
The campaign to take the Australian government to court over coal mining was prompted by the Black Summer bushfires that burned from mid-2019, which was Australia's driest and hottest year on record, to March 2020. They were the most intense fires ever documented in Australia. The teenage plaintiffs insist Environment Minister Susan Ley has a duty to protect them from global warming. They argue the expansion of coal mining in the state of New South Wales will worsen climate change and harm their future. One of the claimants, 14-year-old Izzy Raj Seppings, wants to inspire other young people around the world.
Hopefully it empowers everyone to keep fighting for climate justice. I think our case shows people all around the world that if you fight hard enough, your voice can be heard, and that this struggle for climate justice isn't over yet, and there's still so much we need to accomplish.
The claimants are younger than 18 years of age and are supported by a so-called litigation guardian, Sister Bridget Arthur, who's an 86-year-old nun. The class action lawsuit could set a precedent that stops Australia approving new fossil fuel projects. The coal mining company involved said the teenager's case has no merit and should be dismissed. It said in a statement that 450 jobs would be created by the multi-million dollar project. The resources firm insisted major employment generating investments that would boost Australia's recovery from COVID-19 shouldn't be delayed by legal claims that have no substance. Legal experts believe that given the complexity of the case, stopping a major mining project won't be easy. Coal generates much of Australia's electricity and is one of its biggest exports. Its longer-term future, though, is uncertain because of a global shift to renewable energy. The Federal Environment Minister has agreed not to make a final decision on the expansion plan until the trial is over. The hearing in the federal court is expected to last for 5 days, but a judgment may not be delivered for several months. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
VOA Asia Facebook is the choice of millions to see and read the latest stories about Asia and the United States. Follow us on VOA Asia Facebook and say hello anytime you're online or on your smartphone. VOA Asia is also on Twitter and YouTube. Subscribe to all of our platforms for free. See, hear, and read and share all of the latest from VOA Asia anytime.
This news from VOA Asia. China's top legislative advisory body opened its annual session against the backdrop of a crackdown on Hong Kong's political opposition and the country's recovery from the COVID-19 pandemic. You'll find this and all the big stories throughout the day on VOA Asia, Twitter, and Facebook. This is VOA Asia. As VOA Asia continues, the January 6th attack on the U.S. Capitol by pro-Trump rioters trying to overturn Joe Biden's election victory continues to reverberate literally through the halls of Congress. This week, Federal Bureau of Investigation Director Christopher Wray told U.S. lawmakers it was domestic terrorism. As VOA's congressional correspondent Catherine Gibson reports, Wray admitted the Bureau did have raw intelligence warning of violence that day.
For the first time since the January 6 riot at the U.S. Capitol, one of the nation's top law enforcement officials telling lawmakers that riot was domestic terrorism, fueled in large part by white supremacist groups that represent a serious threat in the United States.
It has been the biggest chunk of our racially motivated violent extremism cases, and itself the biggest chunk of our domestic terrorism caseload overall, and the most lethality over the last decade has been from these same extremists.
In his first testimony since the attempted insurrection, Wray said the rioters came from a broad range of groups supporting white supremacy and militia violence, and that there is no evidence for allegations they were fake Trump protesters or disguised left-wing protesters.
While we're equal opportunity in looking for violent extremism of any ideology, we have not to date seen any evidence of anarchist violent extremists or people subscribing to Antifa in connection with the 6th. That doesn't mean we're not looking, and we'll continue to look, but at the moment we have not seen that.
More than 270 people have been charged to date for their roles in that riot, and the FBI investigations are expanding, said Wray.
With more subjects being identified and charged just about every single day, the FBI is committed to seeing this through, no matter how many people it takes.
Many Republicans arguing the domestic terror threat is equaled or surpassed by left-wing extremists, such as Antifa, citing the burning of a federal courthouse in Portland, Oregon, last summer.
In the past year, we have seen massive rioting and violence as extremists, many of them leftist extremists, took to the streets across the country.
But Democrats pushed back, arguing lawlessness accompanying some pro-racial justice demonstrations pale in comparison to violent white supremacy.
It is not equivalent to a violent attempt to overturn the results of elections, nor is it equivalent to mass shootings targeting minority communities. This false equivalency is an insult to the brave police officers who were injured or lost their lives on January 6th.
In a House hearing last week, Capitol security officials revealed they had not received a January 5th FBI bulletin warning of possible violence. Ray declined to speculate on how security precautions might have been altered if that warning had been read.
You know, I really want to be careful not to be an armchair quarterback.
Negotiations for a commission that would investigate the attacks and recommend security precautions have stalled as House Speaker Nancy Pelosi pushes for more Democrats than Republicans to sit on that panel. Catherine Gibson, VOA News, Washington.
Making headlines in Asia, after a four-day marathon court hearing, a Hong Kong court denied bail to 32 of 47 pro-democracy activists charged under a Beijing-imposed national security law. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. Now on VOA Asia, like a lot of police departments nationwide, the Chula Vista Police Department in California is using drones to help catch suspects and assess situations on the ground before police arrive. VOA's Julie Tabo has more.
Chula Vista 911. What's the emergency there?
The 911 call comes into the Chula Vista Police Department, and a drone is launched to start tracking a potential suspect.
Go ahead and I'm hiding you.
It streams live video to police officers on the ground.
Get down! Get down!
Until they can arrive on the scene.
This individual was someone that probably could have created tremendous challenges for our community. We determined that the vehicle was actually stolen. We could see that he jumped over a fence and went into a dumpster and threw something in there that we later determined was actually a stolen handgun.
The Chula Vista Police Department is among a growing number of law enforcement and public safety agencies in the U.S. that are turning to drones for assistance. About 4,000 public safety agencies have drone programs, according to a March 2020 survey by Drone Responders, a nonprofit program. More than 40% of those are law enforcement. But more eyes in the skies means potentially more surveillance of communities and the possible invasion of people's privacy.
Drones are a tool like any other, and they can be used for good or scary purposes. What we don't want to see is a world where police drones are crisscrossing the skies with no regulations, collecting video left and right, going to every little incident, or being used for routine mass surveillance.
The Chula Vista PD has 7 drones equipped with video cameras that relay information back to headquarters.
A drone is able to respond quicker. It does not have to maneuver through traffic. The drones can just fly overhead and get there as quick as possible.
Since 2018, the department's Drone as First Responder program has responded to more than 4,000 calls for service and has assisted in more than 600 arrests.
It gives our officers so much information so that we can keep the community safe, the subjects we encounter safe, and the officers safer.
What Stanley of the ACLU advocates for is that police departments be transparent about their use of drones.
We've been pushing local laws that require police departments to get the permission of the city council or other elected body before they deploy new surveillance technologies.
Kennedy agrees with these policies and says that's why Chula Vista's drones are used for surveillance only in active police calls.
Our drone responds to radio calls. We also put up on our web page 24 hours after the fact every single location that our drone has flown to and gives a definition of why we responded there.
The role of technology in policing will likely increase.
I believe we are at the beginning of a revolution of what drones can do for law enforcement.
Julie Tabo, VOA News.
A new wave of social media stars are proving the online world is not just for young people. Nina Vishneva has the story, narrated by Anna Rice.
They're called greenfluencers, and they're online and on point, pushing stereotypes, social media norms, and age taboos out of their way.
I born in Barcelona, in Spain.
78 years ago.
Magda Llojes de Gutierrez is the star of New York social media rumors, muse of French couturiers, and the queen of Catalan accent. She's artistic and beautiful. Her closet is larger than an average New York City apartment, and her Instagram followers are measured in the tens of thousands.
3,000? Surprise. And after, a few time after, 5,000. And oh, 5,000. And now 25.
Her followers live all over the world, and she's generally at least twice or even three times their age. From her, they learn to dress extravagantly, to mix colors, and to stand out.
In the morning, many times, I put the hat. I hat. And after, put this and this. Beginning, one thing.
Steve Austin is 82. He has over 1.5 million followers on TikTok.
I couldn't believe it. And as I said before, most of them are young people.
His fans know him as Om Steve. A few times a day, the man who lives in a modest apartment in an assisted living facility in Texas logs in to entertain his online audience with dance moves, tricks, and funny phrases.
Well, good morning, my little petunias.
The song Cooking with Steve became a true hit.
Which wasn't really cooking. It was just like making a sandwich or a bowl of cereal. And people thought that was, I guess, funny.
He has worked as a dental technician for over a quarter of a century. Another 25 years, he spent working as a ticket collector at a theater. But the lockdowns and social networks have pushed him to start a new career as an online influencer. And if he has trouble figuring out social network features, his younger fans are always happy to help.
They wanted me to be their grandpa, or I reminded them of their grandpa.
Well, as I said, I was sick and tired of being sick and tired.
Joan McDonald is 75, one of the most known fitness influencers, not only in her native Canada, but way beyond its borders. She has 1.2 million followers on Instagram.
One girl wrote me and said she blew the picture up, put it on her fridge so she can see this is what Joan went from and this is what Joan went to.
Excess weight, high blood pressure, endless pills, all that was part of Joan's life until recently. Her daughter is a professional coach and she designed a special fitness routine for her mom. In just 3 years, McDonald lost 30 kilos and gained a whole new life, turning from a grandma with lots of medication into a sporty woman with lots to share.
They feel motivated. They figure, if she can do it, then I guess we can do it. You know, like, or their younger ones that are trying to motivate their mothers or their aunts or, you know.
Okay, here we go.
LG Powers is 68. She's a pensioner living in Utah, but her 500,000 followers live all over the world. Powers used to work as a graphic designer making little notebooks. She planned to start a business selling them using social networks, but her artistic side won.
And it made them feel like it validated their music. When the Beatles came out and they didn't, my parents didn't like them. It's like, you have to like this. You know how parents don't like the kids' music?
Fans from all over the world write to her in a myriad of languages, asking to sing a song in their native language. Russian is one of them. The coronavirus pandemic and isolation have created fertile ground for the elderly on social media, and it proves it's never too late to start something new. For Nina Vishnova in New York, Anna Rice, VOA News.
That's our program for today. Thank you for joining us on VOA Asia. Continue online. We're on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and YouTube. Just look us up by typing in VOA Asia. We also thank our managing editor, Diane Gao, and our VOA Asia team, Ira Melman, Doug Bernard, Keith Lane, and Amy Hybels. I'm Jim Stevenson. We're in Washington. We hope you have a wonderful day and weekend ahead. Be safe. Be well.